welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast. I'm Manuel Lemos, the host of the podcast. And as always, I have here with me Michael Kimsel as my co-host. Hello, Michael. How
Good
are you
morning.
Doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Yeah, hopefully, I think you are doing better than when you were sort of affected by the cold.
Yes, just a little bit left.
Just comment a bit about why we did not have an episode in December and also in January. In December, I went to Portugal, my home country, to visit my family. I was not with them for a few years now, and it was about time to visit them for Christmas. And when I was there, I was sort of not used to the cold that usually goes on in the winter. And it seems that this year it was even worse than before. And I became a bit raucous, and my voice was not good enough to talk for more than a few minutes. So I decided to skip the podcast. And then in December, in January, we were also not able to record with you, Michael.
Yep.
You had also your own domestic issues.
Well, yeah, actually I had two. I was traveling a bit, went up to Detroit for Ohio for a conference, and then I caught the flu and brought it back and gave it to my wife, good husband that I am. And so yeah. We spent most of probably 2 or 3 weeks in January just really sick between us. And then my wife ended up with a pneumonia of some sort, so she had an extra ordeal than I did. But it was not a fun month. We were both sick, and your voice was gone in December. So
yeah,
but here we are. We're back.
Yeah. Hopefully all is well now, and we'll get back to the regular schedule. We'll try to keep the pace of recording one podcast a month to talk about what is happening lately in the JavaScript world. And in this episode, I'd like to comment a bit on an article that I wrote in the JS Classes site blog. It covers mainly the Chrome OS operating system that Google is working on for quite a while now, and this is sort of indirectly related with JavaScript. It matters to all web developers in general, not just JavaScript. But the main message that I wanted to pass with this article is to clarify a lot of things that people are not getting about Chrome OS. Probably it's Google's fault they are not making it very clear. What is Chrome OS after all? Why another operating system? And is it really different from what we are used to use every day? Because in practice, Chrome OS is Chrome, the browser that Google has been developing at a quite rapid pace. They have released many, many new versions just this past year, 2010. And they basically, what they have been doing is to implement many of the planned features for HTML5 JavaScript APIs that allow you to develop more enhanced web applications that address several challenges of traditional web applications that require you to access websites. And one of those challenges is the difficulty to continue using an application, a web application, if, for instance, you go offline, if you lose the connectivity to the server, you in a traditional web application, you would stop using the application. And but with the latest enhancements of the HTML5 APIs, which make browsers web applications potentially capable of dealing of loss of connection, things start becoming more interesting because if you lose the connection, now you are able to continue using and eventually any work that you are doing, for instance, if you are working on a word processing web application and you lose connection, what you will not be able to do is to save or retrieve the your work from the web, but you eventually can continue working on your documents if the web application is ready to save the changes to local storage. And HTML5, the JavaScript APIs provide you means to continue using your application. Once the connection is restored, you'll be able to, actually the application will be able to save any changes that you made in your work. So,
I have to say, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Pardon me for cutting you off, but sure. What we can do that now to some extent. We can do it with HTML5. You're talking about HTML5 APIs, and we've been able to do it with plugins before that. I'm just not sure what Chrome OS really... Well, I have an idea of what they think it might be, but it's been talked about for a while, and it's still not here. Chrome's a great web browser, and if they're going to extend that web browser experience to other aspects of using a netbook, that's great, but why is it taking so long? Why have we had a couple iterations of iPad, and we've had other devices come out, and Chrome OS is basically just it feels like it's stagnating, and I say that as somebody who is not a developer in it, but I just expected more. I've expected more from Google in delivering something that we can use.
Right. In reality, Chrome OS is just Chrome. And if you put Chrome in another operating system, not the intended Chrome OS, which is basically a Linux distribution, you'll get the same that you'll get Chrome OS. More or less the same. There are a few minor features that will be built in the firmware of the machine that will ship with Chrome OS, but other than that, the most important enhancements are in Chrome, the browser. And I agree with you on the sense what is taking so long for Google to clarify what exactly is going to be Chrome OS. Where is the difference between using a regular browser and a Chrome OS machine?
As you just said a moment ago, well, Chrome OS is really Chrome, and I think that's the impression that people are trying to give now, but I don't remember when it was first brought out. I don't remember that being the message. I remember it being opposite. No, Chrome OS is an operating system, and it's going to be a total experience, and Chrome is just a browser, and they are separate.
Right. So there are a few enhancements that will they'll try to make it more secure, but that is something sort out of the OS itself. They will build features in the machine firmware. For instance, a machine just for accessing the web will not need floppy disks or stuff that is still supporting the BIOS of current PC and notebooks or netbooks, and they'll strip down all those features so the machine boots much faster than a traditional PC. And other than that, you'll still get what any Linux distribution with Chrome will provide you. They are claiming that the machine will boot much faster because when you take it from suspension state or hibernation state, but that is already available in any Linux distribution. The machine will also boot much faster because they will be using SSD drives in the so-called native Chroma OS notebooks. And so basically there is nothing, there is almost nothing that besides that security feature that they will build in the firmware of the Chrome OS, native Chrome OS machines. It will still be a Linux distribution, and what you can do with any Linux distribution, Ubuntu or OpenSUSE or Red Hat or whatever you prefer, you'll still be able to do the same and with Chrome OS. And so the new thing is not really there, in my opinion. The new thing is actually in the stuff that Google's building in Chrome, which is actually new.
I'm feeling the same way. It felt 2 years ago or so, it felt like, hey, this might be something, and maybe this will be sort of revolutionary in a way. And they've basically let other companies pass them by in terms of the getting it out onto devices. And I wonder sometimes what the real goal of it is for them, if they're going to continue on with it. I'm assuming they are. I'm hearing a little bit more about it these days. But is it primarily just something so that they can get more, sell more ads to us? You know, that's Google's business, is selling ads. So is that really going to be...
Right, that's the other aspect that I also cover in the article. Because one of the new things that they have launched recently is the Chrome Web Store. The Chrome Web Store will allow you to sell your own web applications. And what are web applications? Well, basically there are a few types of web applications. One of them is the hosted applications, like those that depend on accessing to a remote site to have to get some service. Like if you go to Google Docs, you can produce some documents, and for that you already can access via any other browser. And what is new is the type of application which are in reality Chrome extensions. So they are specific to Chrome. They use Chrome-specific features to build in those extensions. What they can do besides regular applications. What happens is that when you install a Chrome extension, you have to provide, the developer has to provide a manifest file that describes the privileges that you need to have the application work in full. So, for instance, regular applications will be able to access local storage, but they are limited to 5 megabytes. If you are going to have an application that needs to manipulate, for instance, large video files, 5 megabytes for application is quite limited. So Chrome extensions can request to have a privilege to have a larger, actually unlimited local disk space usage. And there are other privileges that allow web applications, which in reality are Chrome extensions, to do more than traditional web applications that just use the standard HTML and JavaScript APIs. And here there is a new set of opportunities that can be explored by web application developers. One other interesting thing, it's the native client. Michael, are you familiar with the native client?
For what? For Chrome?
Yeah, because this is for now it's a Chrome specific feature. Well,
I don't think I am.
Well, basically, it allows you to produce extensions written in C or C++. If you are a low-level programming developer, you can develop special extensions that probably require more resources more CPU, all the CPU that you can get, greater control. And what the native client extension support does that Chrome has now built in is to have extensions that are written in a way that are portable between machines with different architectures.
Okay, I do remember hearing about that some time ago, when early on in Chrome's existence. Yeah, I do remember hearing about that, yeah.
So, and those extensions, the compiled code, will work in different operating systems as well, not just the same operating systems. The same code will... It's a sort of well, it's not really... I don't know if calling it bytecode is accurate, but it's, from what I understood, it's LLVM bytecode, and that gets translated to the native machine code. But the new thing that Chrome is providing with native client is also some security features that ensure that the applications that that you are installing through these Chrome extensions based on native client code will not execute code that may be insecure. For instance, you could not develop a virus in native code, because the before accepting the installation of the bytecode of LLVM, there is a sort of an analysis what it does, and certain system calls are not accepted.
There will be people that will get around that somehow. I don't know when, I don't know how, but they will.
Actually, from what I understood, there is a contest. Google is promoting a contest. I think they offer $20,000 for to whoever is able to produce an extension that sort of breaks out of their sandbox. And this is important to inspire security, because otherwise you will also have the problem in Internet Explorer ActiveX extensions that, from what I understood, they do not have this security control. And this is somewhat a new thing, an enhancement that is worth thinking about. And I also hope that other browsers, not just Chrome, also support native client extension support in their browsers.
I'm kind of mixed on that myself. And personally, I would rather see more effort going into and not, there already is some, but more effort continue to go into the JavaScript engines and perhaps come up with a JavaScript to native client some JavaScript to native client compiling step and allow you to distribute JavaScript bytecode. But that's just me. I'm not a C guy, so I don't know it. I don't like it. JavaScript is a lot more prevalent, is a lot more popular, is a lot more accessible to people. Doing something like that just... it is a bit of a hybridization between allowing people to write desktop client type apps, but distribute them over the web in a cross-platform sort of way. I understand the motivation behind it, but that said, there's probably a few people out there doing it, but it still doesn't seem very widespread yet.
Well, I don't think I understand it is something that probably does not have more than one year old. Anyway, I understand your concern, but I think there are two main motivations for supporting native client. One is to allow developers to build applications that require the maximum performance that you can get from the user's machine. And the other is protection to the applications. Because if you build your web applications, browser-based applications, all in JavaScript, it will be sort of easy to steal your code. And
you could distribute compiled JavaScript code. someone could come up with a way to do that.
Yeah, and but I think that is already provided. If I'm not mistaken, I think there are compilers that can translate JavaScript into LLVM bytecode. I'm not an expert on this subject. Maybe I'm.
I'm certainly not.
Maybe I'm misinterpreting something that I read. Anyway, the idea is that you have options. If you want to build your application fully in JavaScript, you can. If you want to, from what I understood, you can use native client extensions to implement some basic functionality and have it extension functionality exposed via JavaScript. So you can have a small core of your application code written in native client and then have it called from the JavaScript code of your application, which can be probably the great part of your code. So in the end, you will have this option, so it's up to you to decide. For some people, it will be important to protect their businesses with some compiled code to make it more difficult to steal. But others may protect their services, their applications, businesses with web services that are provided exclusively to paying customers. But then those services will not be available when there is some downtime. So at least now you have all these options, which I think it's good because it didn't have these options in the past.
Could be. We'll see. I guess some of this just feels like none of these are things that address any concerns that I have right now. So I look at them and I think, well, I don't get it. Therefore, there may not be any value in it. Maybe there are for some people. And yeah. I read your piece. I see what you're talking about here right now. I can see that there may be value for some people, but it does feel chicken and egg. It feels like there may not be people investing in doing some of those more advanced techniques until they know there's a marketplace. Either a commercial marketplace or there's enough of an audience using that browser technology, and so they may not do it and wait for more people to adopt. But that's a perennial technology problem. That's nothing to do with this particular thing. That's early adopters and all that kind of stuff.
Right. We have to wait and see how the market will be embracing or not this initiative. But I just wanted to... closing this topic, I'll just to mention, for instance, one possible application that could be developed. You said that you personally would not have a need to use these things, but imagine somebody that develops an application to implement some video editing facility. There were some web-based video editing sites, but so far I did not see them succeeding because I suppose there are challenges in uploading so large files to the server. It takes a lot of time, so it would be better if you could edit your video captures on your local machine and only have them sent to the server when you are done. And with this native client support, you can already perform develop applications that perform CPU intensive operations like video manipulation.
Sure, or audio, would be another one.
Anything that is CPU intensive is a good candidate for using this native client support feature. One interesting thing that I did not comment on the article is that Google already provides a lot of common C and C++ libraries already compiled in LLVM bytecode. And that is interesting because some of those libraries are exactly meant for video manipulation, like FFmpeg. if you, at least if you are used to Linux applications, you notice that it's the very popular library for video manipulation. And yep. there are many others in there already compiled, ported to work well with within native client applications. And this is just an example. And I think it will depend a lot in imagination of each developer to figure what applications these technologies will allow you to develop. So we have to wait and see.
Well, I'm going to wait. I will wait and see what people come out with.
And there's also the Chrome Web Store, which if all goes well, it will provide the application developers a good way to spread and sell their applications in there. And so I would say that despite it, there are a few things that Google also has to evolve and mature. There is a lot that is in the hands of developers to see the opportunity and take it to develop some browser-based applications.
Well, I will let them do that. As much as I use Chrome, I haven't done any developing for Chrome at all. So I'm just a consumer in that respect.
Me neither. But moving on with our podcast, now talking also about another OS that has been enhanced. Michael, I think you are more familiar with it than me. Would you like to comment?
I would. See, Chrome OS, it's all theoretical, whatever it may come out. But Hewlett-Packard's purchase of Palm last year put the web OS developer community, I think, in a little bit of a state of what's going on. We're not sure. But yesterday, they gave a very long press release, demonstration of three new devices that are all based on WebOS. WebOS is a web-based, or more specifically, a JavaScript-based operating system for mobile, primarily for mobile devices right now. A couple of years ago, it was the Palm Pre, and then the Palm Pixie, and the Pre Plus, and the Pixie Plus. They now have three new devices. The Pre 3 is the next generation of the Pre phones. The Veer, V-E-E-R, is a smaller form factor phone. I think it's a 2-inch screen instead of a 3.5-inch screen smartphone. It still has a keyboard on it, though it looks kind of smaller than the standard Pre's. And then the biggest announcement was the what did they call it? The ThoughtPad, I think, is what it was called. That is, it looks identical to the Apple iPad. TouchPad. It was TouchPad. I'm sorry, not Thought. I was thinking ThinkPad. No, I know there was an OU in there. The TouchPad, yes. The TouchPad is nearly identical to the Apple iPad, from what I can see. The current, it's whatever the dimensions are, 13 millimeters thick. And I couldn't see if there was the home button on it like the Apple iPad has the one button on it. But everything else looks fairly similar, except it's running a version of WebOS, which has been upgraded. It's now WebOS 2.0. A lot of focus on multitasking and running, running a lot of concurrent applications at the same time and being able to move data from one app to the other while they're both running. So that was a big focus of their demonstration yesterday. Another interesting feature that came out, if you want to, what was it called? Touch to share or tap to share. The demonstration was having a Palm Pre at a tablet, the TouchPad tablet. The TouchPad tablet was opened up to a particular website. The Palm Pre went up and just touched. They touched the two devices together, and the web address, the website, was transferred over. The address was transferred over, and it loaded up that page on the Pre. So some interesting ideas they have about convergence between multiple devices and spreading the WebOS platform to other devices in the future. I personally would like to have seen another device that came out that was not a phone. The Veer and the Pre 3 are both phones. I would like to have seen maybe a smaller form factor tablet, but they're doing what they're doing right now. So the difficulty for me was that these all look really nice, but the Pre looked really nice 2 years ago, and then it was 6 months before you could get a device. They're doing the same thing again. They had a thing in February yesterday, and now they're saying the tablet will be available in the summer. That's all they're saying, and there's no pricing released. Now, apparently, the rumor is that Apple will have a new iPad out in April, and I think Palm is trying to hedge their bets and wait for pricing on that before they announce pricing on their tablets. Who knows if that's true. But all of this is just, I don't have a webOS device, but when it first came out a couple years ago, I liked it. I actually did an interview with a guy named Frank Zimetti on the WebDev Radio podcast because he'd written a book about webOS. He was doing a lot with webOS at the time. It's all based on JavaScript. A couple of podcasts ago, you and I were talking about server-side JavaScript and the importance of understanding event-based programming and asynchronous callbacks, all that kind of stuff. It's the exact same thing in webOS. Everything is an event. Everything is async callback. You need to understand that. But there are a lot of JavaScript APIs which give you direct access to the underlying hardware. Probably a little bit different than some of the standard server-side JavaScript. You know, a lot of the server-side JavaScript really doesn't care too much about the hardware other than perhaps the file system. You're not dealing with the screen. You're not dealing with touch. You're not dealing with accelerometers or compasses or GPS or anything. So you have some more interesting things available to you, but underlying this all is JavaScript. And what you and I just talked about before that, underlying this in webOS 2, they're now baking in Node.js. It's a part of the operating system. So I think hopefully, and I don't think that they'll just be able to ride the Node popularity train right now or the Node bandwagon, but if they can get these devices out there quickly enough and they can start convincing some people who are really, really serious JavaScript developers to focus their time on webOS, we might see some really, really cool stuff. I think there may be a chance for this to pull ahead and come back. You know, interestingly, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, Macs were always a niche, always a bit player. And in the past 10, 12 years, we've seen Apple turn around and really come to dominate. I'm not sure that HP with webOS is going to be able to dominate exclusively in the next few years, but I think they stand a pretty good chance of staking a claim. I'm actually more interested in, and I think I'm a bit more enthusiastic about webOS than I am Android. For as much as there's a bunch of Android stuff out there, it's just software. It's just an operating system, and we've seen a lot of fragmentation. HP has an opportunity to come up and say, this is JavaScript-based, it's webOS, it's built on Linux, there's a lot of it's open source, it's very open to get into, but we're going to maintain more of a control over the devices, the hardware, sort of like a middle ground between the openness of Android and the platform curation and the hardware curation of Apple. So that's where I think their sweet spot can come in. And again, the relevance to this is it's JavaScript. Anybody listening is probably a JavaScript developer. If you haven't played with webOS yet, I would encourage you to go Google around for webOS, grab the emulator, just start playing with stuff. I got that a couple years ago, and I made a couple of small little sample things, but it was fun. I like JavaScript. I was able to make some really cool apps really quick.
Right. We are recording this on Thursday, 10 February. I think was it announced yesterday, right?
Yep.
So I did not have much time to browse around what exactly they are launching now.
It was just an announcement of here's our three devices. I think one might be out. I think one of the phones may be out in April. I think you can start pre-ordering it from Verizon today. But the tablet itself, I don't think, is going to be out until the summer. So we'll have plenty of time to read more about what's coming and all that.
Yeah, well, I think the most important, at least for us, for this podcast, is the fact that they are using JavaScript as the main language for developing applications. Although already read in their announcement that they have support for plugging in C and C++ components.
Mm-hmm.
So
under the hood, I know the old Palm Pre phones, it's Linux under there, so certainly there's ability to do something with C, I guess, if you needed to, but I think the main focus hopefully will be the JavaScript side of things.
Yeah, but this is interesting because it goes along the lines of the wishes of what many developers would like to have a more, I would say, accessible language to develop their applications, because if you develop for the Apple devices, you have to learn Objective-C, and if you develop for Java, for Android, you have to learn Java. And I think embracing JavaScript as the main language gives WebOS a more interesting aspect, make it more appealing for many of us that which are web developers, and we've been using and we are familiar with JavaScript since more than a decade. And
now I'll throw out one other thing here, just talk about JavaScript and mobile devices. The Titanium framework, or the Titanium framework, that is you can write JavaScript and compile to Apple, or to compile to iPhones, iPads, and Android devices. Though there's some discrepancies there. Apparently they're focusing on BlackBerry now. Now, given the JavaScript nature, I haven't heard anything, but I would really like to see Titanium support WebOS sometime this year. That would be phenomenal. I think it would be one of the easiest translations to do,
right, because it's the same language.
Yeah, and what that might encourage people to do is, if you're going to write something, this is kind of wishful thinking here, but if you're going to write something, write it for WebOS and then translate it through Titanium to some other thing. Now, obviously, not all apps are going to be able to written that way, but hey, write for JavaScript. If you're already writing for JavaScript, you may as well include the WebOS platform. And if you're doing it with these minor changes, it can now compile on Titanium, and you're going to be able to target all the platforms. So,
right.
I think as much as Apple hates this cross-platform stuff, and to some extent, you know, some of the apps you might build with that, they're certainly going to be better with native code. But there's a lot you can do with JavaScript and cross-compiling against the libraries. So.
Right. I think that's the impression that I've had. Last October, I was in the Google Developer Day here in São Paulo in Brazil, and I talked with Tim Bray and about many subjects, including this about Chrome OS and Android and stuff. And Tim Bray, for those that are not familiar, he is one of the co-inventors of XML, but he is now working at Google in the Android platform. And I asked him what does he think about the Titanium platform. He said it is a good idea to use it, but in the end you will also develop a bit in native code to take advantage of platform-specific features. In native code, in the case of Android, it will be Java. So if we can develop most of the code in JavaScript, I think it will be already good for our eventual productivity. So it's a good thing to see this this new OS, a web OS, thriving through the mobile device market. We'll see how this market will evolve, and if web OS machines will have some adoption.
I hope so. Yeah,
make it more interesting. But I think that's all we can say for now, because we just have an announcement. We don't have the new devices yet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll wait and see. Now, moving on with our podcast, now towards the end of the podcast, just comment a few happenings that took place recently. Specifically, jQuery has just released the version 1.5.
Yep, 1.5. Though I don't use jQuery enough to know, or for this to be an impact, and I don't think you do either, do you?
Right. My use of JavaScript is mostly restricted to my own components and some server-side generated JavaScript. I know jQuery is really popular. It does a great job abstracting the differences between platforms, but for my own uses, I did not have the great need to use it, so I could not figure what exactly was so important with this release.
Well, I think, you know, to some extent, probably every release is a little important, just because
they're always doing some little performance improvements, or sometimes big performance improvements. And I think the one thing that was sticking out to me was that there was some templating engine. Well, there was supposed to be a templating engine that was included in 1.5, and I think what my reading was, it's now included as it's in the 1.5 family, but as an extra plugin or an extra component that you'd have to get. But this was a templating system that was offered by Microsoft.
Oh, I see.
Contributed by Microsoft. So, you know, that in and of itself is it's good to see a big company like Microsoft being a bit public about some of their stuff. They've adopted jQuery, and I think they bundle it with Visual Studio, have been for a while, and to be giving back something, it's a nice little heartwarming story.
Yeah, actually, they provide paid support to anybody that wants to use jQuery and needs to some professional services to support their development. So I am aware that Microsoft provides it. That's why they are so involved with jQuery. But anyway, this is just a note of this new release. Moving on with other topics of our podcast. Michael, I think you wanted to comment of some JavaScript events.
Sure. Well, David Calhoun puts together the weekly JavaScript news for JS Mag and puts that on the blog. He's started the past few weeks to put up a list of some of the upcoming events. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Looks like there's about 11. Probably by the time people are hearing this, the JS Bootcamp in Virginia will already be done, and High Performance Mobile in San Francisco will already be done. But coming up in March, there's a Confu Web Techno Conference in Canada, in Montreal. Right here in Durham, North Carolina, my friend Matt Henry, who used to write for JS Mag, is organizing a mobile camp, like a mobile developer, a bar camp sort of event, sort of just a one-day, very laid-back, everybody get together kind of event focusing on mobile app development. JS Conf, which started a couple years ago, they're having their big thing in May 2nd and 3rd in Portland, Oregon. And there's some others there that are coming up, maybe future in May and June and so on. But if anybody listening has some other events that you know of that are web development or primarily JavaScript focused, give us a call. How do people get in touch with you, Manuel?
Yeah, we can just write to info@ jsclasses.org.
Excellent.
And we'll sure mention it in future podcast editions. Hopefully get some more exposure now that JS Classes has many thousand subscribers that will podcast.
I guess I should say I focused a bit on North America. JS Day is coming up in Italy, May 12th through 14th. Mobilism is coming up in Amsterdam, May 12th through 13th. So this is, for as much as there was a lot of U.S. and North America focus there, there have to be events going on outside of the U.S. So the more of those, anybody listening, if you know something happening in the U.K. or Germany or France or Spain, wherever you happen to be listening, those are all European. If there's anything in Australia or Japan, Brazil, Manuel?
Anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, take the space. You'll sure help spreading the word about your JavaScript events.
Yeah.
Now moving on, and practically at the end of our podcast, we just comment about a few of the latest JavaScript objects that were published in the JS Classes site. We just comment a few of the latest since the last podcast. Michael, would like to go ahead and comment on those that you think that got your attention.
Well, there were a few. The one, and it's actually the most recent one right now, is Marquee. And I had flashbacks to the Microsoft Marquee tag, or maybe it was the Netscape Marquee tag from 96 right. or 97 or so. That's initially what I thought this was. I thought it was almost that it was going to be a retro joke. And it's not. It's a JavaScript component that allows for a very smooth scrolling of blocks of data, either up and down or right and left. And this is by, hope I'm getting the name right, Artūrs Sosin from Latvia. So Artūrs, I hope I'm saying your name right, if you're listening. There's a demo of this that I got to look at as well on his, I think it's on his site or Code Snippet site, where I could see it in action. And There actually was a little bit of nostalgia of, well, that reminds me of the Marquee of 1996-97. But it definitely looks like a very smooth scrolling animation. And one of the examples had two marquees going at the same time. No flicker, no anything. Smooth as silk.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think they used that trick of the changing the offset of the elements just to make the elements change the position in the page. And nowadays, browsers are very fast in updating the...
I guess I am comparing a 2.6 gigahertz processor against a 150 megahertz processor from 13 years ago. So
yeah.
I guess there should be a little bit of a difference, shouldn't there?
Yeah. Yes, nowadays HTML and CSS have provided developers other powers that we did not have 12 years ago to manipulate elements on the page.
Was there a another class that you were looking at you wanted to mention, call out?
Yeah, there are several interesting. I'll just mention a few because we don't have the time to mention all of them. One of them is Soft XPath by Gregory Movsesian from Israel. Also hope I'm spelling his name correctly. And what it does is sort of provides an abstraction to the support of XPath APIs on different browsers. Some browsers provide a different set of functions to access DOM elements on the page using the XPath language. And this object provides an abstraction and for the different browsers that provide such APIs. And this is interesting for those that would like to use XPath in their applications without concerning with what each browser supports. And other than that, there was a Qt1 that was actually published in November. Well, we are already gone over Christmas, but it's still winter in many in the North Hemisphere. So I think maybe this object that provides a snow effect on the page by René Tainze from Germany is kind of cute. See the flakes dropping on the page, very similar to real snow. And I thought it would be worth mentioning because it provides this nice effect. And finally, one that I also noticed that would also provide a nice effect is a jQuery plugin to provide a gloss effect.
Oh, the gloss. Yes. I was waiting for you to come back to me, and I was going to do the gloss. But
yeah, I also I got that you also found that interesting, that component by Alap Badran from Palestine. Well, by the way, greetings to Palestine. Despite the difficulties of living there, they are able to participate in the JS class site in sending a nice component, this one of gloss. Michael, I don't know if you noticed what it does. You wanted to comment.
I was looking for a demo.
Yeah, actually, basically what it does is sort of it provides that effect of like as if you are pointing a light over a shiny surface. And in the case of this object, what they do is to implement that effect on top of images. So it pretty much seems as if you are if you have an image that is made of a shiny material, and you are passing it by a light, and it gives an interesting effect that may help you cause a good impression if you use it in your site.
Yeah, actually, I'm looking at the code right now, and I see how it's done. This is a plugin for jQuery,
right?
So it relies on I was looking first to say, well, gosh, this is pretty tiny. Oh, yes. Well, it's expecting jQuery to be there already. And with that said, it looks pretty compact, but I can see exactly what it's doing. And that would be an interesting effect.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's compact because despite its the effect causes a good gloss impression, what it does is very simple. It's basically sort of scrolling a gloss image on top of another image.
Yep.
So that's why it's quite simple, but impressive, I would say. Now we are practically ending our podcast. Michael, we wanted to comment a few things about your magazine, JS Mag.
Well, similar to the position that you're in, you're looking for more people to contribute to JS classes, contribute their code and put up. I, too, am looking for more contributors to JS Mag. We're always on the lookout for good content. People, if you've got an idea for, I learned this about server-side JavaScript, or I learned how to do this with EXTJS, or I learned a better way of sorting, or whatever it might be. If you're doing something with JavaScript that has solved a problem that you have, it's probably a problem other people have. If you'd like to write about it, earn a little money on the side while you do that, come over to jsmag.com and shoot me an email, and we'll get you hooked up as an author. We touch on quite a lot of topics between mobile and server side and various client side JavaScript. Hopefully, we may have some more WebOS. We had a WebOS article last year. Hopefully, we'll have some more of those as well too. So, almost anything, if it's of interest to you and it solves some of your problems, we'd like to hear about it. So that's my friendly looking for authors or call for authors pitch for JS Mag. Right. And if you've just written something and you want to share it, just you don't want to write a whole article about it, just want to share some code, that's what JS Classes is all about. So get your code in there too.
Well, and as you mentioned, in JS Mag, it would be worth emphasizing that you actually pay for the contributions.
Yeah. I don't know if I should mention a dollar amount or not. It really depends on the size of the article and to some extent the complexity. If it's just a kind of a quick one or two page, here's how I did something, it's probably going to be on the smaller end. And if we have larger pieces, we've had some people have much, much larger pieces that we end up splitting into multiple, like a series of things. But we also, people retain the copyright. So typically how this works, some people will choose after 90 days to republish their article on their own blog. So some people prefer to do that. Some people just let us hold on. They don't ever republish it again. So we get a mix.
Right.
But yes, we do pay.
Right, and also get some exposure to your work because I suppose by now you have a significant subscriber base that will be interested to know about more aspects.
It can always go higher. It can always go higher. No matter what the number is, I always want more. But and to some extent, what's interesting to me. And I'm not going to name any names here, but and you've probably seen this as well with your PHP classes and JS classes, is you get to see some of the domain names of people who registered. You get to see the domain names, in my case, of people who purchased. And there's a very big company that just bought subscriptions to JS Mag for their entire development team, which is very nice. But it's also an article in there is going to get you exposure into some of the larger companies out there. I'm not really at liberty to name names, and I almost feel like I'm hyping this here some, but it's always fun to me to see, somebody, an engineer from company X is now a JS Mag reader. Oh, an engineer from company Y is now a reader. And they take it seriously enough that, you know, they're putting down money, they're buying a year subscription, and we use that to help fund paying people to write good articles. Actually, one other thing I'll mention, as long as we're on this topic, is that a lot of people have said to me over the years, I talked to them at a conference or something, they say, well, I'm not much of a writer. We pair you up with an editor. And so if English isn't your first language or you're not sure how to do something, we have multiple editors. Some of them are more technical. Some of them are more focused on just language issues. But if you've got an idea for something, we're going to pair you with an editor, and it's their job. They get paid to work with you to make your article better. So,
right. So don't be shy.
Exactly. That actually has been a concern. I've had people, especially a lot of people from maybe outside the U.S., outside England, Canada, Australia, where English is a native language, and they've said, well, English is not my I'm not really good at writing English. Like, you know what? And I say, look, you've been able to write really good code. You know what you're trying to say about it. Get a rough draft on. We'll work with you on it. That's what we're here for.
Okay, good. Well, that's all for now. I hope to get you also on the next episode. Keep listening. And as you mentioned, if you have any other interesting news and events to comment, you, as I mentioned before, just mail me at info@jsclasses.org. So, bye for now.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Manuel.